This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 2. We thought that Luke and I might maybe take a step back and give you guys a bit of a background about ourselves, how this podcast came to be, and where we are right now with our careers and side hustles. Luke, awesome to have you here, man.
Thank you. Am I the guest?
I think you're the guest by default because I did the intro.
Yeah. I feel like I should start with saying this has been a journey so far already. We've been talking about this podcast for a while, like 6 months maybe. Like, it's been a fair bit of time we've been talking about it, but the last 3 weeks has been a journey. To put into perspective, we just spent 40 minutes recording the intro to the last episode.
Hold on. You say we. Let's get a bit more specific about what that means.
So it means that I need to start animating more and understanding how to do this shit. And to be honest as well, last week we recorded 2 episodes and somebody, me, forgot to turn the mics on.
So long story short, we're pretty much trying to figure this out. We know we've got something good happening. We've got some great guests lined up. And we hope really you enjoy season 1. We've got some awesome content coming through. We just finished recording an episode with an awesome startup entrepreneur. And he was so inspirational. Like, seriously, I had goosebumps half of the time that he was talking. Incredible.
I didn't think we'd be able to beat the first episode, actually, because that was pure passion. And this one was, something else.
It was pure passion. It was filled with emotion. This dude, nothing was going to break him down. And I'm just like, man, can I get a leaflet out of his booklet? Because I'm just like, how do I get to that point? It was just amazing. It was amazing.
Mm. Yeah. And we should also say it went for like 2 hours.
It did. All right. Let's get into this. Let's get into the structure of this podcast. So do you want to give us a bit of a background in terms of what we're going to cover in this episode?
Yeah, definitely. I think to start with, I think we're going to go into our personal life and career and really dig into what we've been doing and where we're at the moment. And I think a good way to summarize it, I think, is to date, we've kind of been pretty humble with it. We've been sort of paying our dues and just getting things done and understanding how to just get shit done. But I kind of feel like we've hit a bit of a wall. We've got that sort of like that 10 in our current jobs, and we just like needed something new to really sink our teeth into and to really fall into the deep end. And personally, I'm shitting myself at this whole podcast thing. I feel like we've gone back to 1, but if we switch that frame of thought, it's actually kind of like we're going to 11 and now we're upskilling into a new thing, mm-hmm. a whole new world. Let's just figure this shit out. Like, it's just been really fun. Like, it's been 3 weeks of pure fun, I think.
I totally agree. And just to give our listeners a bit of context, when Luke and I get together, we talk a lot about innovation, startups, user experience, customer experience, given our backgrounds in the industry. And we've never been really good writers. We can't write for shit. So we thought the best medium would be talking to a mic, let's record it, let's get it out there, see who's keen to listen to it, and provide us some feedback, because we can go on major rants.
Totally. Yeah, totally. We've tried a lot of side hustles, which we'll cover in this episode, of what we've tried in the past. I think one thing that's clear is that we don't want to be in client services anymore, where I think we're just done with that. And I'm cool with that. Like, I feel like it's hard. Sometimes we don't want to admit that. And we just want to, like, that's our bread and butter. We're good at that. Like, if we look at that self-employed quadrant of the quadrant, I guess, where we're really good at that. But maybe there's something different for us to be able to do. And that's what we're kind of on the current vibe, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit of a journey with ourselves as well, because we're talking to people who are in the same position as us. So I suppose it's a bit of an educational process where we're talking to people and we're still trying to figure it out, whether it's our day job that's the problem, whether the actual balance between the day job and the side hustle that's a problem, or in general, how do we kind of keep doing this seamlessly without, I guess, tripping up and really reaching a boiling point. So now let's get into a little bit about our backstories, history, and how this kind of podcast came to be. Luke, do you want to take us through a bit of a journey on your background and how you've kind of come up to this point?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure how far back we want to go, but I might go quite a far way back because I think it all kind of relates. So I guess I come from a family of six. I come from a country town called Bacchus Marsh. We call it the Marsh. It's kind of lame, I know. But I come from a family of six. I'm the oldest of six kids. And sorry, eight of us. Six kids.
Whoa.
And my dad gave me my first job when I was like 12, helping him clean the council. He was a council cleaner. And I guess the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's significant, because what he taught me to do was to never do half a job. The biggest thing I learned from him was to, if you're going to do something, do it right and never leave something half finished. So I kind of, that's kind of carried with me for my whole career, for my whole thing.
Mm.
So from there I went, and I really don't think the school system did me well. I wasn't good at it. And I, thinking back and reflecting, I did a lot of art subjects, and I'm really kind of disappointed or unsure why they marked us down for those subjects. And the more I think about it, it's just like, you know, I didn't do much academic stuff. I did all art things, and my scores were really low because I did art things, even though I went really well on them. And I feel there's a bit of irony now, because creatives are kind of running things, and yeah, I just don't get why that happened. But that's not here nor there. From there, I feel like I've always had side hustles through my career. So going from uni to working, I always had something on the side. I was saying in one of our previous podcasts that I had, I needed extra money, so I went to get a job at a car wash. And
was when you were still in high school?
No. This is after uni. So I did a IBL year, did some work.
What's an IBL year?
Industry-based learning.
Sure.
So for half the year I worked at a print studio, went really bad and got fired. And I always actually thought it was because I was a bad print designer. I am a bad print designer. But actually, I think it might also be because I had a side hustle. So shout out to my cousin Tony. Me and my cousin Tony started a WordPress agency called Simple Clever.
It Simple and Clever?
It was both Simple and Clever, and it was before Skoda came out saying Simple is Clever or whatever they said.
Skoda, the car manufacturer.
Yeah. But I really should shout him out because I didn't believe myself at that time on a technical level. And he really was like, man, we can do this. Like, you can do this. Let's just go make WordPress sites.
Well, I think credit to Tony. I think he's the king of side hustles.
He's the king of selling shit.
Yep.
Yeah. Even when you know you shouldn't be buying what he's selling. We'll have him on one day. You'll see what I mean. But that was amazing. I spent a lot of time at that job thinking about that side hustle. And I think that was my detriment in losing that job.
Sure.
But I'm really glad I did, because that led me to a digital space for my next job where I totally thrive. I'm a calculated creative. I don't exactly know what that means. It just means, I think, that I'm methodical with my process. I'm methodical with how I do things. And the digital space allowed me to work in that calculated way.
So at which point did you go, all right, I like creativity, I like art, but digital is where I want to hit? Like, obviously, during school, did you guys have digital art programs or anything of that sort?
We did, but I was a bad student, and all we spent time doing was stealing the mouse balls out of the mice.
Yep.
Ripping off the plastic or rubber and throwing the ball bearings through windows.
I think growing up in Bacchus Marsh, that's definitely the most entertaining thing you could do in the classroom.
We were pretty bored, yes. Yeah. And we always got away with it too. I was one of those students who people just didn't think I would do anything wrong.
By the way, Bacchus Marsh, just give us a bit of a spiel on that, just so our listeners who don't know where Bacchus Marsh is get an idea of what that means.
Bacchus Marsh is halfway between Ballarat and the city. It's like a nice small country town. I don't exactly remember because I didn't really pay attention in school, but I think it was the place where when the gold rush happened, people would pit stop and then go to Ballarat from Bacchus Marsh. It was like a stopping place, I guess. You used to have really good cafes, good bakeries and stuff like that. It's a bit big now and it hasn't got the same country vibe, but either way, it's too far away from the city. I wouldn't want to live there. But I guess from there, getting into the digital space, I actually had a really unique opportunity where I got to, in my 3 years at this digital agency called Lava, I got to work under three different senior designers. So each designer had a different skill and a different way of looking at how to tackle a problem. And I feel like that's where I gained some of my biggest learnings. So shout out to Ewan, Viv, and Aaron. All had a completely different style, and I feel like I soaked up all of those styles to the style I have now, the visual style. And shout out to Stuart and Brett because they really gave me an entry point into UX and into what UX is just by doing it. We didn't know we were doing UX, we just were.
I'm assuming those are your colleagues from Rush Digital that you're referring to and
from Lava, yeah.
From Lava, sorry.
So the three were the designers and then the two, Brett and Stuart, they were the operators. They owned the business.
Sure, okay.
So they trusted me to do all this UX that I didn't know what I was doing and we didn't know it was UX.
Mm-hmm.
But we did figure out a way to charge for it, which was amazing. Anyways, from there, going as a few different agencies, but always having that Simple Clever in the background. And then going on to work at Envato, where I really learned the most I ever have in my career, how Agile works, how to work with developers, all that stuff. Like, I feel like I had a really good foundation already, but this was just like a whole different level. And always doing freelance on the side, because I am a little bit of a robot and I just really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I just want to do that. I want to get that extra money. I want to create things where it's not in my 9-to-5 and I just have the freedom to do whatever I want. And just really enjoying that. And then getting to the point now where I'm at a point where I really, really want to do my own thing, but I don't want to do my own thing, which turns into me working crazy hours and which only relies on me. So basically what I want to do is build a system. How do I build a system that could run without me eventually and really sort of build that wealth and understand how to build that side of the spectrum?
Yeah, man, that's really well put. That gave us an idea of your kind of how you've come full circle and where you are now in your life. It really highlights your persistence and also determination of how far you want to push that digital part, but also not forgetting about those that really influenced the way you thought about design when user experience wasn't even a thing. User experience design, that is. That's awesome. That's good.
Yeah, it was good. Like I remember back when I was at one of my jobs, I worked at a local council in the archive room. I was an archive officer.
Yeah.
Which sounded kind of fancy, but really, really wasn't. I loved that job, but it was really, really boring. And I really got good at understanding how to use my time in that job. So I went to uni and uni was my side hustle at that time.
Yeah.
I worked 3 days a week at the council and I crammed 2 days of uni and just somehow made it work.
So what were you studying at uni?
I started off interior design, did that for a year. I felt like I was really good at it and the lecturers were sort of saying you should go into an architecture course.
Mm.
But I knew my math was horrible. And if I went to an architecture course, I would most likely become a draftsman, and I didn't want to become a draftsman.
Yep.
So
your maths is horrible, by the way, but keep going.
My maths and my spelling. School failed me, whatever. Mm. Anyways, and then that was fucked. But then, I moved into graphics because a couple of the classes I did were, I was quite good at graphics. But that was because they were the easy graphic classes that you do in between your interior design classes.
Okay.
So when I came into the new course, I was like, holy shit, I am bad at this.
Yep.
And just somehow just got good at it over repetition and just going and going and going. And I should shout out Swinburne for that, because if it wasn't for Swinburne, I wouldn't be able to think in this conceptual way that I can now. And that's what they really taught us. They taught us how to think conceptually. And I think it's a strength that we have as designers, is we can adapt and move forward. And moving into this new podcast world, like, it's just another challenge. Let's go.
That's cool, man. That gives us a background about where you've come from and kind of where you are now. So that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. How about you? Tell us about you. Let's go all the way back.
Oh, man, all the way back. All right. So my family migrated to New Zealand from Baghdad, Iraq. Baghdad is obviously the capital of Iraq. And it was kind of in between the Gulf War and the 2001 invasion, 2002. My family was like, fuck it. I've had enough. Everyone's left the scene. It's about time we do. And being an Iraqi citizen, we only had an option to either go to Canada or New Zealand. So my mom is, she has her master's in English, and she's always loved the language and the culture and what have you. And she really loved New Zealand, nature, everything. And just to give you a bit of background as well, my mom was the CFO at the UN office in Baghdad. Wow. Yeah, she was a boss, and my dad was in the Iraqi army.
Yeah,
as a medical officer. So the conversations in the household were really interesting, kind of a diplomatic angle and then a very propaganda driven angle.
Yeah, interesting.
So how kind of that, growing up in the household,
did that factor like where to go, Canada or New Zealand? Like, did that come into play at all?
Not necessarily. It was just, it really came down to weather at the time and then where we had more family. So two of my aunties had already got their citizenship in New Zealand. They had left a lot earlier than we did, and it just made sense to kind of go where family was, just to help us get on our feet and find a new home. So New Zealand was it. I grew up with a twin brother. We're non-identical, totally different. Had to plug into the school system. I think I was fifth grade primary at the time, 9-10 years old, and I had to learn English for the very first time. So obviously my first language is Arabic, given that I come from Iraq, and I had to learn English for the very first time. And being so young, my brother and I were sponges. We learned English very quickly. And culturally, we kind of just got stuck in cricket, rugby, whatever you can think of, hiking, camping, all that crap that Kiwis get up to, which we absolutely love. We kind of just plugged ourselves into it.
That's cool. So what age did you say you were again when you moved?
When we migrated, it was 1998. I would have been, I think, 10 years old. Anyways, fast forward to my uni years, and I did a degree of business, majored in like marketing and management, the most bullshit degree ever. Not to discourage those that want to get into it, but back then, there was absolutely no damn direction in some of these curriculums or degrees or whatever the hell you want to call it. If I can swap that out for my for experience, I'd do that in a heartbeat, man.
Yeah.
For sure.
So is there anything you could say you learned from that time? Like, any learnings?
Well, I thought I was good at maths and physics to start off with when I, so I was the only one of the few people to kind of complete high school out of all my circle of friends.
In New Zealand?
In New Zealand. Like, yeah. My brother left at the age of 16 and did like automotive, but I was the only one that wanted to kind of stick it out and just kind of make my parents proud, I guess. And
yeah,
you know, did that. And then I thought I was good at maths and physics, went and did a civil engineering degree. Within the first year, I found out that I sucked at numbers.
Are we hearing that we have two hosts that suck at numbers? How is your spelling, man?
Man, I mean, English is my second language, so I've got that excuse.
True, true.
But
it's my second language too.
Yeah, touche.
No,
it's not. Yeah, anyways, did a civil engineering degree, sucked at that. And then I scored a small gig with an ex-girlfriend of mine who was doing promotion. I did that and I was like, all right, cool. Maybe I'll give marketing a go. Gave that a go. And I was just like, oh, did the bare minimum just to get some points or grades or whatever the hell you want to call it these days.
Sorry. That was a uni. That wasn't a job. I thought you meant it was a job.
Which one?
Marketing.
Yeah. Well, the promotion was a job that kind of,
yeah.
Kind of attracted me to marketing.
Yep, yep, yep.
And like the entire four P's and what have you, mm-hmm. you know. So that's why I thought I'd do a business degree, major in marketing and management.
Yep.
Anyways, did the bare minimum, hated it. And then I think halfway through I managed to talk myself into Ogilvy, giving me a job as an account exec, which is pretty much an entry-level suit job, working on above-the-line things, so like print, ads, all that shit. I thought I had made it because I'm like, whoa, advertising agency, really cool.
Madman.
Madman, beautiful girls walking around, everyone's dressed up. This is me, you know? This is my kind of thing. After a few months, I was like, man, this is shallow as fuck. This is not the place I want to be in.
What is that? Can you like dig into that a little bit? What do you mean? Like, what is that?
Well, it was very clicky.
Yeah.
You can tell where the ass kissing was happening. You can see the brown nosing there in your face. Ugh. Like, it wasn't even discreet. Yeah. And it was just like, really? And like, no offense to the people that work there, but everyone just did... That little bit extra just to kind of stand out, to be recognized for something. So it was a very much a rat race to be recognized for your efforts.
Yep.
No one really was trying to kind of step back and let the work do the talking. It was more about talking yourself up. And me personally, I don't know about others. I hate having the attention kind of pinpointed at me.
Mm-hmm.
And from the outset, I thought that place wasn't for me. And I mean, I got redundant after like 6 months and I cried my ass off because I did. I mean, it was my first job out of uni and then I get made redundant. So I was pretty upset. And then the recession just hit and it's like, all right, what do we do now? Anyways, I pretty much talked a lot of shit to a lot of retailers and I was like, hey, I can come in, hook up your Google Analytics, give you a website, yada, yada, yada. Did that. They fell for it, but I did provide some value.
Oh, totally. I think that's one thing that we, a commonality you have with designers, we've talked about how sometimes as designers we undervalue ourselves or we're humble, but we really just undervalue ourselves and we don't charge what we should and that sort of stuff.
Right.
I think you're doing exactly the same thing now. They wouldn't have hired you if you didn't have the value.
Yeah, and I think... talking to people and there were certain things that I learned about communication and like looking someone in the eye and telling them that, hey, look, this is something wrong, but I'll try my best to get up to that point. And I think the belief was more around believing in you as opposed to believing your skill set. So I think they bought into me rather than my skill set because I literally had nothing to show for.
Yeah,
I don't have a portfolio. I mean, I spent 6 months at an advertising agency, so I don't have much to show for in that regards. And also at that time, when I was unemployed, I lived with one of my close boys, and probably he's definitely a brother of mine. Name is Mutman, and we did a lot of creative gigs. We shot music videos. We took photography of gigs and brands. We did branding. We did a lot of cool little things, but it was never anything that was going to put food on the table or give us a solid stream of revenue. So we kind of just hustled until he kind of went overseas. Before he went overseas, we created an agency. And I think we were like 18, 19, running around trying to sell our services. We got a few bites. We got a few things. There was a blog called SlamX Hype. We got involved with that at the time before it got sold. We were heavily inspired by like Kanye West and that entire thing where a lot of these people were coming out and they were being totally raw. And Banksy and like, you know, Exit Through the Gift Shop, that really was embedded in our and our blood a little bit, you know, the entire mysteriousness, but also delivering art that was cool, that was creative, that was, you know, on point, and people were just attracted to it. So that was a main driver. After that, it was just like, all right, let's face reality. And I slowly started getting into more client services, digital products. Left Auckland about 6 years ago, and pretty much came to Melbourne, and started working on a contract when I first landed here at an integrated agency. And then my next role was the role where I met you and we started working together.
Yeah, we should probably talk about that a little bit, but I think before we do, there was an interesting thing you touched on, which I think is a really important point, when you were saying you looked at the people in the eye when you were pitching your ideas, and you had no folio backing you, but you knew how to like be transparent, I guess. And I think that's something, a strength that you and I both have, is we can be both transparent. When I was doing the WordPress stuff, like Tony and I were very, very clear on, this is a theme, this is what we can do with this theme. And before any money. So it was very clear from the onset that this is the scope and this is what we can do in the realm of this piece. And somehow we will manage to be able to charge whatever. But because we were honest, we had no stress, because it wasn't like we, I guess this is my beef with agencies or BDMs, I guess they just sell things that aren't reality. Whereas when you sell something that is in reality, you can actually really enjoy the output, because you have no pressure.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's taking a pride in what you do and really caring about your reputation and what that means to you. You want to go home, you want to put your head on the pillow and go to sleep with a clear conscience. You don't want to go to sleep thinking that you've ripped someone off or you've gained a bit of money by, you know, selling something that doesn't really exist, and, you know, over promising and under delivering. So for me, it's just like, hey, if I'm going to hustle for myself, I need to come straight. I need to get straight to the point. Mm-hmm. If they like me, they like me. If they don't, that's okay. On to the next thing. But I think if I was pretending to be someone else, I would have been found out very quickly. And that would have been detrimental at that point, because, not too sure if our listeners are mainly from Auckland, but those who are will understand that Auckland is a very small community, especially in the advertising, creative, marketing, user experience. Everyone knows everyone. Okay. And as soon as you have a bad experience with someone, you've got a cross on your name. Like, people will find you out quickly. So.
So I feel like I should ask. Is that why Omar is in Melbourne?
I escaped, man. No. Hey, look, I love Auckland. Being a half Kiwi, half Iraqi. I love that side of it. But in the end of the day, Auckland at the time during the recession was just a bit slower. My girlfriend and I, who happens to be my wife now, decided to move here to Melbourne, just to kind of further our careers and get to where we are. And it was just more opportunities aside. Initially, we were thinking of New York and then kind of loop back to Melbourne. But we're like, hold on, Melbourne is the lowest hanging fruit, 3 hours away from home. Let's just do Melbourne first. If it works out, it works out. If Melbourne sucked, then we'll go to New York. But I love Melbourne. It's definitely home for the next few years. And yeah, man.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that you guys decided on Melbourne, because we never would have met. I remember this segues really, really well into a clip.
Mm.
So my second agency that I worked at, which I kind of glossed over so we could talk about this together, was called Clip. And it was actually kind of amazing. We worked out of Revolver Creative, which is a creative co-working space below Revolver. Anybody from Melbourne knows Revolver is the most dirtiest drug den club that exists. And we'd go to work on a Monday morning and you would walk through the back and it would just fucking stink. It was so bad, but so amazing. Pretty much the
aftermath of the weekend. And sometimes you'd even see people coming out there Monday morning from having a bender from the entire weekend.
Yeah, I reckon that coffee girl that was there was probably partying and straight to coffee making.
Hey, mind you, she made some really good coffee.
Oh, she did make some really good. And her egg wraps were like,
fuck. Yeah, they were good.
Anyways, I started there, and probably about a month later, they started to hire an account manager. You came as an account manager, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so they started to look for an account manager. And I remember vividly, David was like, man.
Shout out to Dave Perkins.
Yeah, shout out to Dave.
From Queensland.
Yeah, he was one of the best managers.
I think so. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. We still catch up with him when he's down in Melbourne. I remember vividly, he was like, man, there's this guy, Omar. We really wanted a girl on the team because there was not really any diversity at that time in our team. It was all guys. And he was like, man, this guy, Omar, I think he's the one. And I know we want a girl, but I don't know. Like, he's the one. And then, like, before we knew it, like, you appeared, you were there.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's cool. I pretty much joined the team. It was Luke, Sean, and Chris. Shout out to both of those boys. They were awesome. And pretty much we had a well-oiled machine. You know, we had your client services. We had a talented UX designer, Luke. We had a marketer, Sean, and Chris, that was kind of our full stack developer. And we were keen to take on the world and do some amazing things.
And when we say machine, we weren't a machine. We were powered by a machine in Brisbane, the head office, but we were like able to do whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
In creative wise, we were able to do whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
It was really, really liberating.
And I guess that's how we met. And we just started kind of, Luke and I started vibing over similar music taste, like sneakers.
Coffee.
Yeah.
There's this one coffee dude who made the best coffee and then he just vanished one day. And I'll never forget, like, he vanished and, like, months later.
That's the guy from Richmond, yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember what the cafe was called.
Neither do I, but it was in an alleyway, but he had beautiful
red hair,
red curly hair.
Yeah, and one time we saw him on a tram go past, and we, like, nearly, like, ran down the tram to be like, fuck, where that have guy? You been? Because he just left one day.
He was gone. Yeah, he made the best lattes you'll ever have. Yeah. And obviously being in Melbourne, we're coffee snobs. So we're very particular about how we have our coffee and where we have it from.
Yeah, and actually that's the interesting thing about Melbourne is there is a lot of bad coffee in Melbourne, just to say. So once you find that good spot, that's the spot.
Where we're sitting here in Fitzroy, there's a lot of competition here.
But I'm sure there's a lot of bad ones too, right?
There's bad ones where kind of the tourists go.
Yeah.
You know, but the little hidden ones in the alleyways and like further out to Collingwood, there's some really cool ones, but I won't give out any shout out because if I do, then I'm going to come for your money.
I really wanted to shout out someone. When I was waiting on the way here, I went to get some beer for our guest we had earlier.
I think you should. I think shout them out because they gave you a good deal, didn't they?
Well, no, I wanted to shout them out, but I didn't look at their name. It was like Black Swan or something like that. But I don't remember what it was called. Basically, I went in there and I'm like, hey, our guest on our podcast is like a craft beer dude. what should I get? And he was like, our craft beer is woeful. If you want craft beer, you should go to this place. And credit to him, because when I went to this other place to
was he wearing a brown hat?
Yeah.
He was so good because he served me earlier to get this mountain goat for the rest of the crew here.
They're like black building. It's like a pub next to it and a bottle shop.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one.
Whatever that's called, shout out to that guy because he gave me a really good tip. I went to this place and I was literally in there for about 25 minutes. I could not pick a beer
because
I was like a kid in a candy store with all this beer everywhere. And I enjoy craft beer, but I don't really know much about it. But I love design and the different bottles, the different tins. Like, I didn't know what to pick. I ended up picking the Venom Pale Ale, which was an amazing choice, but I could have gone a bit more boutique. Beers are expensive, man. They were like $9 each.
They are. And I'd love to keep talking about beers, but I think that's not why we're here.
No, it's not. Sorry. Whatever.
So Clip, we started vibing, Luke and I started working on some potential proposals for startups. There was a medical startup that you and I started working on.
Well, sorry, just before we get into that, we should say Dave Perkins ends up leaving Clip.
Oh, yes.
And then we had an opportunity, a unique opportunity, to really sort of run the ship. So we moved from one office to another in Richmond. It was a really fun day, actually. It was like a Saturday. Omar and I went there. We had Man with a Van, and they came and like moved all of our shit. But we had an opportunity to make this space our own, even though it was like kind of dingy, like honestly just a shit space. But it was like we kind of got a chance to make it our own.
Hold on. There was a point where we moved on from Revolver to a really nice place in Cremond.
Oh, that place was amazing. It's under...
And then we had to move to another place. So before Dave left... We went to a really nice spot.
Oh yeah, that's what was like a dream. Like it was like a designer or a creative's dream. Like ample whiteboard space, beautiful walls. Like,
and we got some other creatives to kind of come in there and hot decks.
Yeah. I don't remember what their thing was called, Collective or something.
It was some sort of a startup, I think. Or
yeah. That was cool. But so then from there we downgraded to like an apartment style place. It was really
closer into Cremond.
But we had like an apartment thing. I remember the walls were all yellow and stuff, but somehow we made it like homely. We made it our own, and Omar ran the ship. Like Omar said, we had Sean on marketing, Chris developing, and myself on UX and UI, and we somehow just started to win clients, also facilitating clients in Brisbane and just running it how we wanted to, I guess. Like it was a really fun time.
Yeah, it was definitely cool because we had full kind of creative freedom in terms of how we executed projects, the type of clients we went after, and just operational things really. There was four of us, so we couldn't go wrong. Like, I mean, we were a close knit team. It was an amazing spot. The chemistry was on point. However, we weren't getting much backing from our head office in Brisbane.
Yeah.
Mm. And things kind of just slowly started falling out. And I think that's when you and I started talking a little bit more about what we could do outside of work to financially assist ourselves.
Totally.
And to stay stimulated whilst doing what we do best, because we figured out that there was a bit of a, I don't want to say synergy because it sounds a bit wanky, but it is what it is. But there was a bit of a vibe happening between Luke and I where we were bouncing off each other really well. For example, an art director and a copywriter, if you're from advertising, or I don't know, sports terms, if you are a midfielder and an attacker. Any more hypotheticals or examples I can drop?
You lost me at sports.
Okay, my bad. Anyways, we worked really well together and we thought, hey, let's give this a chance. I started work.
I guess it's one of those things where I think the best way or the easiest way to describe it is friends that work together. So a good sin, but not friends in the sense of we're just going to do whatever, in the sense of we have a synergy where we can make things happen, but also just enjoy it.
Mm.
Play cool music in the background, know when we need to dial in, know when we need to just say fuck it and go to the pub, like just like really, really understand how the day works. But I think a big tribute to us is that even though we were kind of doing our own thing at that time, we both knew it wasn't the right time to do our own thing. Like it was very clear that we needed to learn more things. We didn't know what it was yet, but we needed to learn more about the industry, about ourselves,
yep,
to be able to successfully create something,
yep,
which took us on to other paths. Omar, well, I moved on first. I moved on to Envato.
I was heartbroken at the time. I was just like, I lost Luke. He's gone. My life's just going to crumble.
That was one of those hard decisions where it was like, why the fuck wouldn't I leave? This is an amazing opportunity. But at the same time, really, really hard choice to leave. But I'm really glad I did, because me leaving eventually sparked Oman leaving. And as I mentioned before, at Envato, I had the biggest learning curve of my life. The team that I came up with, shout out to Roscoe, Jess, Eo, Paul, Gabby, Heather, I'm definitely missing someone, Emma. It was an amazing team. We had a really, really good time. We had like this amazing team that we worked with, all of my Elements team as well.
Yeah.
We just like had a really, really good time. All the synergy was right. And we made a really cool product. Like I left Envato 2 years ago, and the UI of my product, like the Envato Elements product that I worked on from the beginning, is exactly the same. Mm. And I'm proud of that, because I feel like we created something, and the learning from that was amazing. And I feel like now bring all of those learnings back into this new thing, it's time.
Cool.
Omar, tell me about your learning when you left Clip.
When I left Clip, I came to a user experience agency, and I haven't left yet. And I've pretty much worked my way up from client services and production to new business to now kind of doing everything, really, from new business.
It feels kind of natural for your skill set, I think.
I don't even know what my skill set is, to be honest.
But that's why, because it's hard to define.
Just roll up my sleeve and just, you know, or roll up my pants and like dive in the shit. Yeah. So whatever that needs fixing, whatever that needs to be done, I just kind of do it. And that's where I'm at the moment. I think we should start talking a little bit more about how we've developed this thing called Jewel of Doves.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think segueing in from these journeys that we took to the learnings that we've gained, all led us to this place called Jewel of Doves. The best way I can describe the inception of this is that the side hustle has never ended. We've continued to work on freelance projects in the background. You know, 7 to 12 at night is like prime time to work for us. I love it.
I hate it.
I love it.
But it's a must.
And I guess the starting point really is just I don't like emails. Emails are old school to me, just like Microsoft Word. I can't handle it. I can't handle making a mistake and then sending a new email to rectify that mistake. So I decided to open up a Slack workspace to start to collaborate with clients. And as soon as I did it, it was like literally the same day, I was like, Omar, I just created this workspace. I think I have an idea. I think we can build a community in here. Let's do it. And it wasn't really clear at that moment what that meant. It was just like a thought. And Omar can probably attest, I have a lot of these sporadic thoughts all the time. Omar has stopped replying to my Slacks. But that's not here or there. So that started to build organically. And over time, we just kind of kept building and building to the point where we had about 40 people in there. And we started to talk about, we should do a meetup, and we still haven't, but we were talking about what can we do with these people? Like, all these people are people that we know, the people that we talk to, we can engage with them. We throw ideas in the channels. We throw inspiration in there. People throw things back.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Like, people don't really engage as much as we'd like to begin with. And we kind of started to realize, I think it's because people are actually doing work during this time rather than, you know, slacking on Slack.
People are busy. People are doing their thing. But I think the group of individuals that we've got in there are all very smart people that we can intellectually identify with, and we can get along with, because they also have different things going on in their lives besides their day job, which has kind of given birth to what we're doing now on these mics.
Definitely. Just before we get into that, I should also say we had another idea that we did, which I'm going to say because I don't think we're going to do it, and I think it's a good idea and someone should do it. We were going to basically collaborate on creating digital assets and then send them to like different places to sell. I won't go too into it, but the point of saying that is I would also want to shout out Heather for that, because Heather really helped us with our vision and our branding and how we perceive ourselves, and helped us really start to bring engagement into the workspace. So I just wanted to give that shout out. Oh, and when I was talking about the Envato stuff before, I forgot Rod. Shout out to Rod.
I don't know who those people are. I just know Heather. Because I work closely with her, and she was incredible, really driven, and I hope you're doing well. In London,
she's in London right now. Yeah,
in London. I hope you're killing it. I hope you're doing well.
I told her the other day, actually, she wants to start a side hustle to eventually be on this show.
Oh, boom!
And her side hustle is to be a fairy at kids' parties. Which could be interesting. I could see it, but
I can definitely see it.
Yeah.
With those high heels that she struggled with that day. Anyways, as Luke was saying, we started this community, and we slowly started to find out that a lot of people had side gigs and side projects, and they were aspirational, and people were just so motivated. And we're like, holy, okay, there's something here. How can we extract that information from them? And start sharing these stories, because there's some really legitimate stories. But at the same time, Luke and I had been listening to a lot of podcasts about business and about successful stories. And we're just like, okay, this is cool. This is nice. However, we're sick of hearing the successful stories. We want to delve into the sweat, the blood, and the tears of how you got from point A to point Z. Let's be real. Let's be honest and really delve into these learnings, because this is what we wanted to understand. And we couldn't find that. No, we looked everywhere and we really couldn't find that. So it's like, you know what? When we sit down and talk to each other, we come up with really cool ideas. When we talk, people listen, I suppose. I'm assuming you're enjoying this. I hope you are. And we're shit writers, so might as well just get on the mics and start talking about this. And that's how kind of this podcast came. Is that the same recollection you have?
Or? Totally, yeah. We're just fans of being raw, I guess, and just saying it as it is. And even if you think about the thought, nothing against writing at all, but you think about like the process of writing and like the corrections and the refinement and the proofreading, like we kind of just want to say what we want to say and move on with that thought. But I totally agree. That's exactly the thing. And I think something to really iterate there is that we've tried our side hustles a lot and nothing has really stuck. Nothing has really brought us passion. Like, we don't understand how to do it. And I think our hope is in talking to these people that we will gain a better understanding for ourselves of what it means to have a side hustle, to balance a side hustle, and eventually transition it into a system, into our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on this journey as much as you guys are. We're here to learn. That's our main thing.
I couldn't have said it any better. That's absolutely right. I mean, nothing's really stuck, but we just said, all right, how about we just start talking to other people who are doing their thing and start learning from them. And this is very exciting, because we don't actually have a direction. We don't know where it's going to go, but we know that there's something there. And I hope you can appreciate that. I hope you you can pluck out some gems and get motivated to kind of get your thing started. I guess we're starting to wrap up. Yeah, Luke?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's pretty much everything that we want to say.
Do you have any kind of last words, anything you want to say to our listeners?
Yeah, I kind of brushed over it before, but we recorded a few episodes last week that I forgot to turn the mics on for. So we kind of are re-recording this episode. So there are a few things that we've probably missed. So I think we'll probably drop those little gems, I guess, throughout other episodes.
Yeah.
Because we did kind of go through those stories kind of quickly. But yeah, I think my final thought is really just find something you enjoy and start to do it. Like we really enjoy doing side things. But now that we have this podcast, I feel an array of passion, I guess. And it's become more than enjoyment for us. I think it's become a bit of it's like a challenge, and it's just like a really just fun and unknown. I think the unknown is what's making it fun. And I think if you find a side hustle that you can enjoy, it doesn't always have to be about the monetary value. And I think that's what matters.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I just like to say that don't put pressure on yourself in terms of trying to find that side hustle. The side hustle is pretty much what you're passionate about. If you know what you're passionate about, then you're a lucky person. A lot of people don't know what they're passionate about, and they need to kind of try different things and dig a bit deeper than normal, which is totally fine. Everyone takes their own time, but find what you're passionate about. Focus on that passion, hone in that passion, and then everything else will fall into place. It's so much easier said than done. But believe me, this is coming from someone who's tried different things. And besides this podcast, I do have other hustles that will slowly start to unveil through this podcast series. Mm-hmm. But stick to what you're into. Stay true to yourself. And if you feel like you need to get someone that you can partner with, or a couple of friends where you can kind of bounce ideas, because you maybe not have this the motivation that you need to do so, then by all means. But I think understanding your strengths from the outset and really sitting down and writing what that means would be really vital in understanding your direction and what you want to do besides your 9-to-5.
Yeah, definitely. One thing we totally forgot to do is talk about what's happening on this season, which is the main point of this episode.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so in closing, we have a really, really exciting season ahead of us. Like we said earlier, we started this about 3 weeks ago, like legitimately, and we have a moderate schedule, and somehow people are just showing out for us. People are getting really excited, and we've managed to fill those spots really, really quickly. We have guests ranging from people who are starting just like a brand new idea to people whose side hustle has become equal to their hustle, sorry, to their 9-to-5. And they need to make a choice now of what do we do to everything in between, all different industries. It's going to be a very, very exciting season. We can't wait to talk to these people and just uncover these gems and share it with all you guys.
It's going to be very exciting. It's been an overwhelming response from those that we've approached. Everyone's agreed. I'm yet to hear a no, and if I hear a no, I'm going to be surprised. Now I think we've set the premise and we've set the standard. But if we do hear a no, then we'll kindly accept that. That's your prerogative, and that's totally fine. But
this season
there's no issue. This season's going to be dope. We can't wait to get into it. And we've got a lot of people around us that are helping us now as well, who have figured out what we're doing. And I can't wait to kickstart this whole thing.
Fuck yeah.
Nice. I think that's all we've got to say, yeah?
Yeah, it's like 10:30 nearly. We got to go get some tacos.
We will. We've just launched our brand new website. Go to sidehustlepodcast.co. If you have any questions, there's a little question link there. We've also got our social media Side Hustle Podcast. I think there's like underscores between the side, the hustle, and the podcast. Head us up on there if you have any questions, any comments. We're always keen to hear your feedback, always keen to hear what you've got going on. If you've got a side hustle, if you want to jump on this and spit something on the mic, And yeah, man, we're super excited about this, but I'm running out of words, and I think tacos sounds good.
Definitely. Just to reiterate, all feedback is welcome. Constructive criticism is amazing for us. We're in the design industry. That's what we do. Any feedback is amazing. So please just throw it our way. Let's get some tacos.
We hope you enjoyed this, and on to the next episode.
Peace.